It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you this first weekend in August?
I tell you, I am happy to actually feel back to being a little more human. Been suffering from shingles for almost 4 weeks now, and today is the third day in a row that I have finally been pain-free. So that is a good start. I'm not going to overdo it or push myself, but it feels good to be back amongst the land of the living.
That's excellent. What about you, Brad?
Well, you know, I had my gallbladder out in emergency surgery about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. So for those listening, the moment, I think pretty much the moment we were done recording the last episode, like it was right after we hit stop on the recording, Brad went to the hospital. Is that right, Brad? I think that was the night of the podcast.
Yeah, my wife was about an hour and a half away at some kind of family retreat. And I told her, you know, I texted her and I was like, I think I'm having a gallbladder attack. And just for some background, about 6 months prior to that, I had what we think was a gallbladder attack. And it went away after about 2 or 3 hours. And a couple of people were like, you should go talk to a surgeon about that and see, you know, if they can take it out. And I just forgot about it. So then right after the episode 2 weeks ago, I started having another gallbladder attack, but it just started getting worse and worse. And finally, I was like, I'm driving myself to the ER. I can't take this. And then about, I don't know, 8 or 10 hours later, I was in surgery.
Well, sorry to hear that. Wow, that's really strange. I myself had a leg injury that I won't go into. But yes, I guess getting old sucks, man. We're all three afflicted, and poor Jim's not even here this week. His is not sickness related, but we've all had some problems. So I was on vacation last week, went to the middle of nowhere, Tennessee. My injury kept me from doing whitewater rafting and all the other activities my family was doing. So I pretty much sat at the very nice rental property that we had and played games on the Switch while they were gone. So I got Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. I knew it was happening, right? I knew it was going to be that way. So I got some games to prepare. I got Wolfenstein 2. Was playing that, and Infinity War came out on digital, so I was able to watch that. The place we rented had a movie theater in the basement, and it was really nice on the movie theater. So yeah, it was not the best of vacations because I didn't really get to do anything, but in a way, it was kind of nice just to be a lazy piece of garbage for a few days. So no complaints.
Well, I tell you, between you and Jim loving the Switch and Jim loving Pokemon Go, dude, I ended up having to unsubscribe from iMore's RSS feed. Every freaking other article on there is either about something on the Switch or something on Pokemon Go. And the thing is, like, I wasn't getting the truncated RSS feed. They do like 20-page articles on Pokemon Go and all the characters.
Do you do Feedbin? Is that what you do?
I use Feedly through a browser, and then I use whatever version of Reader it is these days, Reader 3 or something on the iPhone.
I use Feedbin, and they allow you to set filters inside of yours, so the feeds never make it, so the articles you want to filter never make it to you. And I filter a ton of different anime things. So if you're using something like that, like if something matches my filter that I don't like, it just marks it as red. So it's like it's still in my feed, but I never see it. And I don't know. You should probably look into that because iMore has a lot of good stuff. I do agree they do go a little nuts with the Switch stuff, which I appreciate. But as someone, you know, if you don't own a Switch, I could see where that would be majorly, majorly annoying. Let's see what else happened. I bought my fourth Amazon Cloud Cam. And I did not realize until I got it home that it requires, if you go over 3, you have to use a paid plan from Amazon. So I did that, and it's worth it. What's interesting about this is that on Prime Day, when we were recording, when we were getting cameras, and we talked about this when we recorded the last episode, I had originally was going to buy 2 more, which would have brought me up to 4, and I only bought 1 more, which was 3. Well, Best Buy had them on sale for $60, sort of matching the Prime Day pricing from a couple of weeks ago. And I couldn't resist, so I got one. But now that I'm on the 5-camera plan with Amazon, which is like $100 a year or something, it's not cheap, but you get zone detection, you get scheduled recording, you get all sorts of person detection. So there's some neat features in there, but now between that and the Logitech cam and the Ring, my house is completely watched from all directions. Kind of nice.
I've been pretty pleased with the Cloud Cam so far. And speaking of which, if you find them again for $60, I want another one.
Best Buy today. Go Best Buy today. It's still $60, I believe.
Awesome. So the thing that I really like about the person detection thing is the one that I've got set up right now. I bought 2. I haven't figured out where I want to put the second one. But having a third one lets me now put them in the two places I've been debating on whether or not to put them. Something wrong, Brock?
Yeah, it's back up to 120. My bad. It was a two-day sale, started Friday, so dang it. Sorry.
No worries, but the thing that I like about the person detection is where I have the camera set up is kind of at the end of my foyer pointed towards the front door, and the wide field of view that you can see with this thing, you can see my whole stairwell going up, and you can see into the dining room and into the formal living room and the front like bay window. Well, one of my dogs is trustworthy out of the crate when we're gone, and the other one is not, so we keep her in the crate kind of in the bay window so she can see the neighborhood. Anyhow, my point is, while we're gone, I don't get push notifications letting me know that there's been movement, even though the dogs are, you know, wiggling around or moving, or my one older dog walks through the house 40 times a day. But as soon as, like, I walk through the front door or Kate walks through the front door, instantly we get a person detected notification that kind of comes up. The cool thing is, it's still recording those movements, right? So it's not like you miss that data. You're just not getting notified every time it trips.
Do you also do the home away notifications like I do? Like I put my wife's phone on it and my phone on it. So if we're there, if we're both there, it's not automatically doing anything. But when we both leave, it automatically records. Do you do that?
I don't, because, you know, one of the things that I want to make sure of is, like, let's say I'm working down in the basement and somebody breaks into the house upstairs, right? I'm home, but I want that to be recorded.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I can see that. Most of the time, if I'm in the basement and I'm by myself, I may put the alarm on stay so that, you know, if somebody came in, I would still know it. I don't know. I'm still not over the camera recording you all the time type of thing. Just seems a little, I don't know, weird. I'm trying to get past it, but I can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, so I've got a couple of FOSS cams that are set up, and they record 24/7, right? They're not even motion activated. I've got them hooked into my Synology NAS management software, and what that does is it does a new file is written every 30 minutes, 48 times a day, I guess. So, and then I've got it to where it dumps those files after like 10 days. It's kind of a rolling auto delete kind of thing.
Interesting. Each of us live in our own little Fort Knox over here. It's pretty weird. I never thought I'd be this way, but, you know, the technology's gotten so cheap. It seems silly kind of not to do it. I don't know. I think when I'm out of town, if my wife's here, I like to be able to, to sort of amp up the security and make things, you know, I'll keep it recording all the time if I'm not here for whatever reason. But sometimes when I'm home, I'm not as worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not looking to confront anybody that's in my house that shouldn't be. I just want to have the best possible video evidence so they can be brought to justice after it's over.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel. Alrighty, so what's going on this week with Apple? Let's see. Apple becomes the first $1 trillion company. You guys hear about this?
You know what's cool? Not $1 billion, but $1 trillion.
It's pretty weird that a company that doesn't sell oil is made it to the $1 trillion mark. That's pretty cool, I think. They beat Amazon, Google, Microsoft, all of those companies to the $1 trillion valuation. That's insane to me.
I think the biggest thing for them is they have so many variable, extensive additional streams of income coming in. I mean, now granted, Microsoft does with their services business. And you got to think the App Store brings in billions of dollars a year. iCloud brings in billions of dollars a year. The iTunes movie store brings in billions of dollars a year. The music store does. When you've got all of these disparate programs that are bringing in billions with a B, well, at some point, you make enough billions to make it a trillion with a T.
Are they still making 30% on the App Store?
Still making 30% on the App Store, which was genius, I think. Even though if you're a developer, I guess it sucks. But the business is so lucrative that people are willing to sort of suck it up and take it because they want access to those paying customers.
I think people take for granted, though. You know, so sometimes people think that the 30% is exorbitant, but you got to realize, man, they made a super simple portal where they're the ones providing all the delivery, all the updates,
all the bandwidth.
So you got to think, right? Every time an app gets updated, that's a free update. That's something they're not getting any revenue on. Every time there's a free app in general, they're not getting revenue on that either.
Completely. I mean, that's You know, there is overhead associated with that. Plus, you're providing access to a billion plus customers. So I can see both sides of the argument. I can see where, hey, maybe it should be at least variable. Maybe you should be able to negotiate a better deal. I would love to be able to do some of my Amazon things through the app instead of having to stop, go to a browser and do it that way. But I kind of get it, I guess. And I know that didn't Spotify and Hulu used to charge more if you did it through an iTunes subscription than if you went to their site and did it manually? I think that was a thing, right?
Yeah, it was. I think it was like $11.99 instead of $8.99 or something.
That is nuts. I thought that was a violation of policy, but I definitely remember them doing it.
Well, so at one time they actually pulled the ability to subscribe and it said, you know, hey, you have to go to the web to subscribe. And that was actually a violation, telling them to leave the app to go somewhere else to get it. And so they finally kind of came to the conclusion of, well, if somebody wants the convenience of iTunes billing, then they're going to have to pay the monthly rate plus 30%.
That is nuts. It's kind of like when I deal with smaller companies, people that are in business for themselves that accept credit cards and they give you a markup if you use a credit card. It's like, that's not how credit cards work. The whole point of using the credit card is that you're guaranteed to get paid. No one's going to write you a bum check. No one's going to, you know what I mean? Like if that's what the way that you're going to do it, then raise your prices across the board and factor that 2% or whatever. And if your margins are so razor thin that you can't afford that, then, you know, bump your prices up for everybody across the board. Don't penalize people for wanting to use to get credit card points. I don't understand it, but I do run into those every now and again.
Don't penalize people for just wanting to use their credit card for, you know, the people that just don't carry cash. I mean, I'm one of those people that don't carry cash around. And you'll either go into a place that wants to charge you a surcharge for using your credit card, or they make you buy a minimum amount. You know, you have to buy $5 worth of Red Bull which isn't hard to do, or $5 worth of gum or something, you know, before you can use your credit card just because you don't carry cash.
If you're a merchant, you should be, if you're in a store or something like that, I see like Subway or something like that do that every now and again. And it's kind of like, if you're not doing enough business that you can't just eat the charge, then that's pretty sad. But when I remember a few years ago, my interior designer charged a fee if you wanted to use a credit card. It's just like, but why? You're providing a service that you do, right? This is not like you spent this much on material and, you know, your margins are this much. You can pad that a little bit. So I don't know. Seems silly.
Yeah, when I was a small business owner myself, and I sold a lot of goods, right? So, you know, 90% of what I was selling was not services. It was actual, you know, tangible goods. And I hated getting hit with the credit card fees as that business owner. But going into it, I immediately knew a cost of doing business in the industry that I was in was going to be getting hit with credit card fees. And so I would offer some customers, you know, if they would call me up and ask and say, you know, hey, can you do a little bit better of a price? Well, if something was $1,000 and I was going to get hit with a, you know, 3% fee, I'd tell them, well, okay, well, I'll let you have it for $970 cash. Right? Because at the end of the day, I was only expecting to get $970 out of that purchase in the first place. So if you want to give me cash, I can pass on the money that I'm not getting hit with back to you.
Yeah, it is kind of silly. So TechCrunch had a clickbait article about Apple hitting $1 trillion, and the article is called "The Greedy Ways Apple Got to $1 trillion," and it is the I don't even know how you write this with like a straight face. Like, I guess the industry is really tough right now for journalists on the web, and you have to resort to stuff like this. But some of their reasoning is just ridiculous. So one of the first argument on their list was Apple makes you replace frayed charging cables, and their argument is they should make something that's more durable. And I don't know about you guys, but I know if you go into an Apple store and you have a frayed lightning cable that's an official Apple lightning cable, I've had them replace them for free. Like, you can take them in. Now, they have to be official Apple ones. They can't be some third-party, you know, knockoff that you got off Amazon. I had my MacBook Air power cable sort of give out and do the same thing. I walked in, hey, I'm having a problem with this, and they just threw me a new brick and cord and said, here, enjoy it. And that was like a $40 or $50 cable. So I've had pretty good experiences with this, but I mean, that seems so ridiculous to me.
It's pretty nitpicky. I mean, I know people, you know, our industry says, you know, don't buy the junk cables that you would get at the magazines, you know, checkout stand, like if you're in line at the Kroger or at the gas station. But even if you do, I mean, you can still get other brand cables, you know, Monoprice or Amazon Anchor. Cables for or Anchor just for a few bucks, you know, a 3 foot, a 6 foot, 10 foot cable, you know, for just a few bucks. I mean, they're still tremendously cheaper than buying the official Apple cables, and you can typically buy better cables anyway, like the Anchor cables that have the
bungee,
you know, the bigger ends on them with the
bungee or the Kevlar or whatever it is that's on them.
The braided cables that don't bend as, you know, don't have as much of a bend radius. I don't know where I'm going with this, but, you know, you can always buy better cables and not necessarily have to replace them as often as the what seemingly is the cheaper Apple cables.
Yeah, it's not a monopoly, I guess, is the thing. They're acting as if, you know, they're the sole provider of these cables, and first of all, you get one for free and with each product. So that's one thing. But you literally have dozens of choices, if this is not for you, of cheaper alternatives that you can go and stock up on if you want. So I really don't understand this. Anchor's braided cables are supposed to be very, very durable. It's the stress relief on these things, I think that's what it's called, or strain relief or whatever it is that's the problem, where people will also yank the cables out. They don't pull them by the connector. They pull them by the cable. You know, people do things that sort of shorten the life of these things in some respects, but it was just the dumbest thing that I saw as a premise. Like, you know, some executive sitting in Cupertino going, I know how we're going to get to $1 trillion. We're going to make cables and people will have to buy them. Oh, wait, they can buy them anywhere, but they're still going to buy them from us and that'll get us to $1 trillion. I mean, by that estimation, Anchor should be a $1 trillion company. I mean, it's stupid. The next one was buried iTunes subscription cancellations. And this one is the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen, because Apple really does this one actually kind of right. Now, granted, it's a little non-intuitive, but if you've ever subscribed to something through iTunes and you wanted to cancel it, you simply Google, how do I cancel in iTunes? And it's inside of your Apple ID.
And it's been in the same place forever.
Literally, I mean, forever. It's been since...
They don't ever put it in multiple places.
Nope, it's been the same place since 2009 or something, when they first started offering subscriptions. Like, it's never moved. In any version of iOS, it's always been in the same place. And they let you know a couple of months ahead of time that something is going to renew. So, I mean, just click on the alert, or go in, if you're on the desktop and you're reading it, go in through there and you can manage it through iTunes. But plenty of places to do this, and it seems silly to base your argument on how they got to be a $1 trillion company, frayed cables and iTunes cancellations. You guys ever had to cancel anything? You can subscribe through stuff through iTunes, right? Besides Apple Music?
I've canceled a couple things just because I found that later I either wasn't using it enough or it just wasn't providing the value that I thought I wanted, you know, and I somehow mistakenly signed up and it gives you, say, a month for free and then it renews at $7.99, you know, and I'll just write, you know, if it's like $7.99 or $11.99 for the year, I'll just write it out and then cancel it before the year is up, you know, and on that exact notifier that says, oh, it's going to, you know, expire and say, or it's going to renew in, say, 30 days.
I hear you. Let's see, what are the other things they had on the list? Keyboard design problems, which, again, this is a legitimate gripe that you can have with Apple, but it wasn't how they got to $1 trillion. They've been making laptops for, I don't know, 30 plus years, and they had a bad design, I don't know, 28 years in. It seems weird that, you know.
Well, you definitely don't get to $1 trillion but through design flaws and peripherals. It just doesn't happen.
Exactly. If that was their modus operandi, they wouldn't be where they are. The other thing they mentioned was killing affiliate fees that blogs rely on, which is something that was just announced this week. So I guess when they got to nearly $1 trillion, this pushed them over the edge. No, a lot of your news sites will link back to applications and games and whatnot, and you would get a fee or a percentage when someone bought the game or did a subscription or whatever through it. And now I guess at the end of August, they're going to be taking that away. And that's going to hurt some small bloggers and, you know, independent press. I get it. But it's, again, this is not how they got to $1 trillion. It's like they danced around every single thing that they did to get to $1 trillion. How about they made things that people wanted to buy? How about they made things that were so compelling that people were like, I'm going to buy this even though there's cheaper alternatives. That's how you become a $1 trillion company. But the last one, of course, and I know this is one we have talked about ad infinitum, but dongle hell. And their whole secret plan right up there with the cables is to just make dongles. Dongles is how we'll become a $1 trillion company. I mean, are you kidding me?
Yeah, a couple years back, we had a salesman that was from one of the tech companies come in, and he, I think, had a MacBook Air at the time, which had essentially no ports at all other than like a port that you could plug dongles in. And he opened his laptop bag and came out with like a gallon-sized zipper Ziploc that was nothing but just old bag of dongles. And so he was trying to do a presentation through the projector. And so he has to empty out this, you know, big bag of dongles. And he's got like a printer dongle and a VGA dongle and a HDMI dongle and, you know, his CD-ROM drive external. And it was just pretty funny to see big bag of dongles.
So playing devil's advocate for a minute, though, you don't really see Macs in the workplace as much as you see PCs. And I say that as someone who's been a consultant who travels around and who travels with a MacBook Pro. So I know you just don't see them as much. So I can kind of see that stance. Even on my older MacBook Pro, where I still have all of my ports, I still need to carry an HDMI cable, to have a VGA cable, because some old projectors, the ones at your current employer, Jason, they may have done away when they moved to the new building, but I can remember in the previous building that VGA was still the standard on every one of their projectors there for a while. So, you know, if you're in that type of role, I get it. But, you know, for the most part, if you're in the consumer market, which is where they seem to want to live, you can get by without the dongles in most cases. I know that it's a good joke and people like to give them a lot of crap over it. But, you know, in your everyday use, if you're just doing this at home, if you're doing this about, most of the time, you may not need it as much. I'll give you a weird situation where I thought I was going to need it and I didn't. When I went on vacation this past week, I forgot to take any of my HDMI dongles for my iPad. And I was like, oh man, I won't be able to watch anything. Well, the place that I was staying in had an Apple TV, and you couldn't even access the Apple TV menu through their little home theater system. Everything was AirPlay. So basically, if you wanted to watch anything on their Apple TV, you had to AirPlay from your phone or your iPad to be able to do it, which was fine. I rented Ready Player One because my nephews hadn't seen it, and just AirPlayed it from my phone. I set my phone down on the table and just plugged it in, and we sat there and watched a movie. Same thing with Infinity War. I just did it over AirPlay from my iPad to the Apple TV. So the future is coming, right? You know, and if you really have a problem with dongles, they don't force you to do it. They're not like, they're acting as if they're a monopoly. And if you don't buy into this, then you can't have any. And it's like, there's tons of people that for whom this is not the case. I have a friend that's a big, you know, he buys Apple equipment for his wife, but he's not a big fan. And whenever he throws stuff like that in my face, one of the things I say is like, don't you own like Windows laptops? Don't you own Android? Don't you own this and that? Yes, I do. But all of those manufacturers are following Apple's lead. And that's what makes me laugh. I think that's what really gripes a lot of people, is that it's starting to move in that direction. Apple, they see what they can get away with, and then other manufacturers do the same thing. So, I mean, I know that's the case, but we're going to get to that cableless world. It's going to be painful to get there, but we're getting closer and closer every single year. And if you provide people that option, they're going to take it, right? If you still made floppy drives or parallel ports, I don't know, serial ports, and stuck all these things on there, people would have no incentive to move anything forward. But, you know, when we moved to AirPrint in, what, 2010? I think that was when it came out. When's the last time you plugged a cable into a printer? Like, that's antiquated now. And yet, that was a thing for those of us that are old people who can remember of having to connect a printer and always having to have some way to connect a printer. And now,
having to buy a $25 parallel cable, when you go buy a new printer.
Oh my God, you could swing that thing around and hit somebody in the head and kill them. And those things were awful. And that was a thing. That was a reality we lived with. And ever since 2010, I can pull up a thing on my phone and immediately print it. Even if you don't have AirPrint, all of the companies now, you have Google Print, you have HP's ePrint or whatever they're calling it now. You can email something to a special email address and it will print to your printer. Like, I do that for my parents sometimes, and they're like, I need to print something out, and they can't figure it out. I can just take a document and send it to this email address, and it automatically prints like it's a fax machine or something on the other side. So again, this is something that, you know, I use that as an example, but I'm a guy who owns hundreds of DVDs and Blu-rays, and I've stopped buying physical media almost entirely, except for some Shout Factory stuff that, you know, Brad and I are big fans of. But I've moved almost entirely to digital. Why? And I thought I would never, ever do that, because it's just more convenient to do so. I don't have to be at my house to pick up a Blu-ray. I don't have to go and search something out of a catalog. I just pick up my phone, and it's immediately with me wherever I go. Just like with music, just like with books. I don't know. It seems, the dongle hell thing seems specious. Like, when you look at the breakdown of everything that Apple's doing, its services and everything else, it's not, you know, and our dongle division is doing great.
Well, I read an article this week that says we might be looking at Donglegate when the new phones come out, because there's plans to not include the Lightning to 3.5 millimeter headphone jack dongle in the case, in the boxes anymore.
Fun fact, that is the cheapest item that you can buy at the Apple Store at $9. It is it's way overpriced, but still the cheapest item that you can buy. And we've had that since the iPhone 7. So we're about, you know, they gave us two generations of iPhones with that. And I still use one daily on my old MacBook Pro. So I get it, but I also go, really? You haven't jumped on the wireless headphone wagon yet?
How many manufacturers are making the Lightning headphones? I mean, I know Apple, of course, but is there anybody else that makes Lightning enabled headphones?
Not even Apple's own Beats by Dre. I don't think they even offer a Lightning headphone combo.
I want to say there was one manufacturer that was doing it, and it wasn't Beats, but it escapes me at the moment. But it's been a while since I've checked on it. But I think, again, the answer isn't dongles. The answer is they want you to use Bluetooth. I mean, that's the thing. Look at all the stuff that has a W1 chip. Look at all the headphones that you can get that are Bluetooth. That's where the way they're wanting you to go is they're wanting you to do this. I mean, there's nothing stopping people from doing it. It's just that I don't think most headphone manufacturers want to take the risk of having, you know, well, this only works with Apple and it excludes everything else. So,
well, I just got my son a pair of older generation JLabs, but he loves them. I got them for $9 on Mac Warehouse. And I mean, they work with Apple or Android, of course, but come on, $9. I mean, that's cheaper than a brand new pair of wired headphones from Apple.
That is insanely cheap. But I mean, I know the only time that I actually use wired headphones is when I'm on phone calls for extended periods of time. And I'm about to do the same thing that that Jim did and get that Plantronics headset. I've had it sitting in my shopping cart with Amazon for about a week or two, but I'm going to pull the trigger on it. So, I mean, I'm even going wireless on that.
As we all three sit here doing a podcast with wired headphones on.
Well, we're a special case, though. I mean, when you're...
Oh, that's sure.
I know we're not professionals, you know, we're not making $1 million records or whatever, but I mean, there's a certain extra level that's needed when you're doing stuff like podcasts or audio recording. But I get your point, Jason.
I would love to be able to do the podcast entirely from the iPad. If I could, I absolutely would, but just can't. We're just not there yet. We're not using Anchor or anything like that. So I guess that's a, you know, if we were doing that, I guess we could. Speaking of wireless headphones, either of you guys jump on the $145 AirPods that were on sale on Amazon this week? If I didn't own two pair, I would have done it. But that was a pretty good deal.
I mean, I think that's about the only time I think I've ever seen the AirPods on sale like that. But the one pair I've got are working fine, especially after having Apple replace the one that was only playing at like 20% volume.
I didn't buy any. I've still got my original pair that I bought maybe 6 months ago, and they're still chugging along. They're working great.
I wonder if this means a refresh is imminent.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a refresh. I mean, they told us about the refreshed case and all that a year ago now, more than a year ago now. So I think they're going to come out fall time with the phones. It almost makes sense to me that they should be released at the same time the phones are. So when people are in the store, it's just super easy for them to go ahead and grab that extra $160 to go in their cart.
Yeah, I hope that we're not just getting a case. They've delayed it this long. I mean, it's been, what, 2 years since the AirPods came out, so I really wish that they would do just a full-on refresh if they're going to do it at this point. And since AirPower's not even out, why even release the new case at this point? But, you know, we've had leaks inside of the beta saying that there's a new icon for the AirPods case, so it's probably imminent. But back to the services for just a moment. Services drove Apple's best third quarter ever, but iPhone sales aren't growing. So the per-device profit is up on iPhones, even though the sales have been kind of flat. They're making an average of $724 on an iPhone compared to $606 from last year, so apparently the iPhone X is doing quite well. Apple Music, iCloud, Apple Pay, App Store, and Apple Care rose 31% for $9.54 billion. Wow. Man, I can't believe all of those services are worth that. Jeez, wow.
Per quarter.
Isn't that insane? Wow. Anyway, so let's see what else. iPhones have gotten Apple to where it is, but you can't rely on that forever, and it's good to see that they're starting to depend on those services. They have to get better. That's the thing. I mean, it's, you know, I got to say iCloud hasn't been bad in recent iterations. You know, things like the Cloud Kit and iCloud Sync and all of those things. I could actually probably drop Dropbox at this point if I didn't need the cross-platform compatibility, and I would probably be just fine, I do believe.
Making the case of iPhones not selling quite as well this year. Here's some claim chowder. You can mark it down. I predict that iPhone sales will be up in the next 12 months. And the reason so is the upgrade proposition last year wasn't spectacular like it has been in previous years. The 7 to the 8 and the 7 Plus to the 8 Plus, to tech nerds like us, we see the value of, you know, the upgraded components and whatnot. But for somebody, you know, just sitting watching their TV and they're looking and they're like, oh, well, wow, this one just barely does this. And I think there was still a ton of sticker shock around the iPhone X of now we've got the first $1,000 iPhone. I think a lot of people didn't upgrade because they're 7s and 7 Plus. I mean, I had a 7 Plus that I really, really liked. So if I had been in that boat and couldn't afford or didn't want to go to the 10, I may not have upgraded to the 8 this year. So along those lines, I think with having essentially two iPhone 10 models or two pro-ish iPhone models and then an LCD model this year, I think that's going to kind of cover the spectrum a little bit better and provide more coverage to people that do want to upgrade.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's looking as if the rumors are to be believed, you know, we're going to get a 6.5 inch OLED iPhone 10 Pro. And apparently that the leaks seem to confirm that it's going to have an iPad style landscape mode. So Jason, I guess that means, as you've said before, no more iPad for you if you get a 6.5 inch OLED iPhone.
I'm looking forward to it if they make it, and it would even be more killer if it had pencil support. That would be just the icing on the cake.
I don't have a pocket big enough to contain a 6.5-inch iPhone, I don't think. It would just be, I don't know, the iPhone Plus, the whatever one I had, the 6 Plus and the 7 Plus, it just seems so just so huge that I can't imagine a 6.5-inch phone in my pocket. It just seems insane to me.
You'll just have to go back to wearing cargo pants all the time.
Dude, that would be the best. I mean, it's a fashion faux pas, I'm sure, but cargo pants are awesome. Cargo shorts are great, too. God, I'm really showing my age.
As I'm wearing cargo shorts now.
iOS 12 Beta 5 hints at rounded corners for the iPad Pro. And they're saying that Touch ID will be eliminated for Face ID and have shrunken bezels. I think that's not a surprise to anyone. But one of the rumors is that they're having problems with Face ID working in landscape orientation, just like the iPhone 10. Like if you try to do sort of a landscape, you turn your phone to the side, Face ID doesn't work today, so it has to be in portrait mode. And they're saying because of that, on the new unreleased iPad Pro, that they're going to move the smart connector to the bottom, and that's where you'd put the keyboard. And I really don't think that's going to be true. I think that would be terrible. Because if you had to put a keyboard and hold your iPad in portrait orientation, like the very first iPad had a keyboard connector, and I've linked to it in the show notes for those who have forgotten. We're talking about the one from 2010. It had a keyboard connector that was on the bottom, and you had to sit it in portrait mode. It was terrible. It'd be nigh unusable as a sort of a laptop-style computer. I don't think they're going to do that. What do you guys think?
I could just see people. I know that engineers would figure out how to make the balance right or whatever, but I can just see people constantly having their iPads fall over backwards, you know, when they're trying to work.
That used to happen on that first dock, even though it was pretty sturdy. You could have it happen. It becomes too top heavy, not to mention the fact no one wants to use a screen vertically. Now, I know you have a coworker that sometimes does that, Jason, because I remember.
But he is definitely special.
Yes, he's definitely, being 8 feet tall or whatever, he's normally used to looking at the world in a portrait orientation.
He is one smart dude, though, that's for sure.
Oh, definitely. No doubt about that. But landscape for the rest of us mere mortals, we can't have a portrait-style computer. Just for most people, that's going to be sort of a deal breaker. I can't imagine them releasing it with Face ID until they figure that out. Whether it's some other, maybe put a notch on the side in addition to the one on the top, I don't know. But you can't do that where it's got to be in portrait mode. That is a non-starter.
We do have one guy at work. I got to tell this quick funny story. He's got a 24-inch monitor that's the extreme widescreen, so it's not very tall at all. And he turns his vertically, and he pulls up a terminal and tails a log in that one all day long, right? So it's so funny. You walk past his desk, and you know, he's just got this full-screen terminal that's just tailing a log that's just scrolling all day long. He says it's therapeutic to him, so more power to him.
He'd introduce this guy into software that actually parses a log, like, I don't know, Splunk or VROPS or some of those, and I know you...
Grep?
Oh, yeah, that fancy thing called Grep that also does things. Let's see, so iOS 12 Beta 5, which we just referenced, came out this week. You guys get upgraded yet?
I did. I found it to be a little more buggy. Quite a few of my apps hang up, like they just kind of freeze there for a while, and the phone's unresponsive for some reason when I try to post to Instagram. it will post the location and the picture, but it won't post the caption. So it just sticks a picture and says where it was, and that's it. So I'll say one thing that I don't like about Beta 5 is when Face ID activates, it doesn't give you the smiley face at the end to let you know that it was successful.
Really?
Yes. At first, I was like, what is different about this? And then I realized that it didn't have that little smiley face, and it kind of almost, I never realized until it was gone how good it made me feel when it successfully logged me in to Face ID.
I want to say mine still has that, so that's, hold on, let me try that.
Nope, bet you it doesn't.
You're right.
Brian didn't notice it because he just expects it to work.
So I use Face ID with Telegram, and because I keep that locked. And when I go into it, it gives me a check mark when it does the little thing. So I just assumed, you know, the main unlocking did the same thing. But no, you're right. It just goes straight into the phone. But hasn't that been that way for a while? Was that just with Beta 5?
That's just with Beta 5. One of the tech blogs actually did a what's new and what's missing. And that was actually called out as like the number one thing that was missing. I had already noticed it before that article came out, but then that kind of reinforced that it was gone.
Well, I was glad the cabin I was staying in had Comcast. You'll never hear me say that I was happy to have Comcast, but I was happy to have Comcast where I was staying because Beta 5 came out, I think, on Tuesday, and I wasn't going to leave until Thursday. So that allowed me to go ahead and upgrade my phone in place so I could be on Beta 5. The CarPlay issues that I had with Beta 4 was the worst. I think Beta 1 was incredibly stable. Beta 4, I had a lot of issues with. But Beta 5 has been okay. It fixed the CarPlay problems that I've had. I have not had any of the problems that Jason has experienced, so that's really weird to me. My Ecobee thermostat app is a little slow to respond, so I can still control that through HomeKit if I need to. But wow, Beta 5 has been actually pretty good for me, and I know I'll be going out of town again in a couple of weeks, and I'm hoping that Beta 6 will be out by then, because we're getting close to September, right? We should be. Normally it's, what, 7 betas is usually what we get before Gold Master ships. So we still, I don't know, we're still on track, I think.
So one other buggy thing for me on Beta 5, and I had good luck with Beta 1 through 4, and Beta 5 is not terrible. I mean, like my expectations are this is a beta and, you know, weird stuff's going to happen. But one of the really weird things that I don't like is, let's say that I'm listening to Spotify over Bluetooth in my vehicle that doesn't have AirPlay, or doesn't have CarPlay, I should say. When I exit the vehicle and I'm listening to Spotify, when I come back to the vehicle and turn it on, it auto-defaults to iTunes every time. So whatever the last thing was that was playing in Apple Music starts playing. It doesn't pick back up on Spotify, so I actually have to go launch Spotify and hit the pause button to take it off of pause and to play, and then it will overtake what's playing.
So that didn't happen previously in iOS 11 or the previous 12 betas, huh?
No, because I mean, like, if I left listening to Spotify when I came back to the car, it would resume right on the same song that I was playing in Spotify.
That is a weird bug. Bluetooth implementations are different from vehicle to vehicle, but if it wasn't that way before, then you could definitely chalk it up to that. My previous cars that didn't have CarPlay but had Bluetooth, those were the worst because I think they were designed for the iPod era. So half the time when I would get in my car, it would automatically start the music app and just start playing whatever was first in my playlist. And we used to complain about this a lot. And it was a Mercedes-specific thing. And I remember I even contacted them, like, why is it doing this? Because it had in there some of their documentation, oh, you can turn that behavior off of autoplay. And they removed that at some point. And it was just the worst. Like, you would get in and, you know, I'd have Gangsta Rap or something just start randomly playing with my in-laws in the car. And it's like, I didn't press anything. Why is it doing this? Best part of CarPlay is treating it like, you know, a sane experience where, with Bluetooth, it was sort of hit or miss. Let's see. 4 million people are using Apple's OS betas. And I guess when you have 1.3 billion, I guess that's not as impressive. But still, that's kind of cool that many people are on the platform. And I'm assuming that's probably iOS. It's probably the biggest one.
Yeah, I mean, if you kind of look back at the history of Apple, though, you know, the number in comparison to the number of devices sounds really low. But, you know, in the Jobs era, I'm not aware of there ever being a public beta of anything, right? Like, he didn't want anything to leave the doors that wasn't ready for prime time kind of thing. So for them to have kind of changed their culture to let customers provide feedback and, you know, actually have a really good program for beta software, I think that number is actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think that's actually a good point. But you get to the user base that iOS has, and if you don't do public testing of software like iOS, then it's going to be a much bumpier experience for everybody. And I think keeping everything...
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Keeping things behind locked doors didn't do Apple any favors. Granted, it was simpler when Jobs was still alive too, because you didn't even have copy and paste there for the longest time. You didn't have... iOS wasn't as complex as it is today. So it was definitely the right move, and I think it was something they would have had to have done even if he had lived and was still in the company. You couldn't get there without doing it. I mean, look at how long Windows did previews of, you know, their own software for the longest time to developers and having public betas and whatnot. I mean, you kind of have to do it when you reach a certain point, I believe. It's been pretty stable for me, and I don't regret it. This is the first year that I haven't gotten burned by an iOS beta, so I'm very pleased about that.
So one thing, I don't know if it's just a bug of my MacBook Pro or whatnot, but the latest Mojave beta, I have let my developer subscription expire, and for some reason my MacBook Pro won't do an over-the-air update of the latest Mojave beta.
Huh. So how are you guys liking the macOS beta? Because that's something I typically don't do.
I put it on the laptop that I use the least, and you know, if I had to rebuild it, it wouldn't be any skin off my teeth. So I really haven't done that much intensive poking around on Mojave-specific features, but it's been fine the few times that I've used it.
What about you, Brad?
It's okay, and I guess it's just because it's full of debug symbols and whatnot that it's just not, doesn't have the polish that you expect with an OS release, of course, since it's a beta version. But I mean, I do like the new eye candy and stuff. The black mode or dark mode is really great. What I was going to say about Jason's was, is it because, what if you installed a public beta instead of a developer beta, if that would allow you to keep updating it?
I don't know. I mean, I was able to download over the air the new iOS beta, but I think that's because I have the developer profile installed and it's just looking there, whereas I guess this one uses the App Store, and so I don't know if like my Apple ID is showing not eligible for that upgrade in the App Store, in the Mac App Store, to download the updates or not.
Interesting. Well, I don't really think I have much else that's worth talking about this week as we wait for the first weekend of September. It's still a long time away, still a month away. I have been playing with Siri Shortcuts. I didn't get a chance to use it because Jim's not here, but I do have one that says start the recording or something like that, where it'll send you all a text that says, get in losers, we're going podcasting. So I'll be using that the next time Jim's around, so it'll just send out the mass text to everybody just before it's time to record. So if you get that text, you'll know that's me using Siri Shortcuts. But I am still way excited. I really want the Shortcuts to have more integrations than what they do. I want it to be like the old workflow days where you can call a Lyft or you can, you know, dial a contact's not a thing that I was trying. There was something I wanted to do the other day and I couldn't do it. And I was kind of surprised because it seemed like it was a sort of basic thing, but I really want to see this open up pretty quickly. But I'm loving playing with the beta right now, just in the things that I can do. You can ask it how long it's going to take you to get to work and it'll tell you little things like that. It'll be nicer when it's integrated with a HomePod, since that's where I do most of my interacting with Siri and I want to be able to do that. I did have a weird thing with the HomePod a couple of weeks ago where I had to go and do a reset because it was unable to do anything with HomeKit. It just suddenly lost the ability to do it. That was a little strange to me. The one upstairs could, but the one downstairs couldn't. But that seems to have straightened itself out. But I'm excited about that. So anything you guys want to mention before we go?
Today in 1986, Lionel Richie released Dancing on the Ceiling.
I remember that song. I remember that video. Rodney Dangerfield was in it. God, we're old. What about you, Jason?
No, I'm good this week.
Good deal. Well, that ought to hold us until next time. So have a good week, fellas, and later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.